Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, Pardes alum. This week, Miketz. This week, we're at the beginning of December, and that means that the December Executive Learning Seminar is coming up quick. It'll be December 23rd through 27th here in Jerusalem. The topic this time will be War and Peace, the Challenge of Sovereignty. It'll be an excellent time, and I urge you to just book your plane flight and come on down. You'll have a great time at Pardes in Jerusalem, and also Jerusalem in December is a very good time to visit. No lines at the restaurants, hotel rates are reasonable, and airfares are very reasonable. So please check it out. All the details are at the Pardes website. This week, Miketz with Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha is Parshat Miketz. Today I would like to examine the role which God plays in the lives of Joseph and his brothers. And let me preface my remarks by saying, God never speaks to Joseph or his brothers. God, in fact, spoke to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And God even speaks to Jacob after his children are born in next week's Parsha, just before they're about to go down to Egypt. And God reassures Jacob, go down to Egypt, and I will bring your children back to the land of Israel. But God never speaks to Joseph or his brothers. And today, what I would like to examine is how, nevertheless, they discover the role of God in their lives. So let's begin with Joseph. And let's begin with last week's Parsha, Parshat Vayeshev. And the first place to begin is the story of Joseph's two dreams in chapter 37. Joseph has two dreams, which essentially have the message that Joseph will take on a leadership role in his family. His brothers will bow down to him, perhaps worship him, which does not sit well with his brothers. But in light of how I began this podcast, God is never mentioned in Joseph's dreams. So that when we're actually reading that story in chapter 37, there seems to be an open question. Where do these dreams emanate from? Are these dreams from God? Are they in fact a mini form of prophecy? Or are these dreams the product of Joseph's subconscious desires, fantasies perhaps, to play a leadership role in the family? As I've noted in a previous podcast, dreams play a central role in Joseph's life. Dreams also play a central role in Jacob's life. But in Jacob's dreams, God appears. God speaks to him. In Joseph's dreams, God does not. When does God first appear vis-a-vis Joseph? This is in last week's Parsha, chapter 39. When Joseph is brought down to Egypt, sold as a slave to Potiphar, who is an officer of Pharaoh, we are told in chapter 39, verse 2, and God was with Joseph, and he becomes a successful man. And then we're told in verse 3, Joseph's master sees that God is with him, and that in everything that he does, God brings his work to fruition, to success. And on that basis, he appoints Joseph to be in charge of his household. And then we're told in verse 5, God blesses the house of the Egyptian because of Joseph. And the blessing of God is in all that he does. Now, when we read these verses, the language very much echoes what we actually had in the previous parsha, Parshat Toldot, chapter 26, the story of Yitzchak. Yitzchak is in the land of the Philistines. It is a time of famine. And we're told in chapter 26, verse 12, that Yitzchak plants. He produces a hundredfold, and God blessed him. The idea that God is with Yitzchak, the idea of the blessing of God, which is reflected in tremendous success. And finally, after Yitzchak is expelled by the king Avimelech, after there's a whole dispute regarding the digging of wells, eventually Avimelech comes back to Yitzchak, and this is verse 28, and says, "We have seen that Hashem is with you. Let us now make a pact." And he says, "You are Baruch Hashem, the blessed of God." So not only is God with Yitzchak, not only is God's being with Yitzchak, does it produce blessing, but that blessing is acknowledged by the surrounding people. In the case of Yitzchak, that leads to a peace treaty with Avimelech. In the case of Potiphar, that leads to giving Joseph carte blanche in his home, to give him full control over all the affairs of his house. One could take this a step further and say that in the same way that when God is with Yitzchak, Yitzchak is actualizing his destiny, which is to take a desert and make it bloom, to transform the land of Israel into a Garden of Eden, to ultimately achieve peace with his surroundings. God being with Joseph is also enabling him to actualize his destiny of taking on a leadership role, of perhaps becoming a ruler. And when we read this story by Joseph in the house of Potiphar, we can perhaps then go back and start seeing, maybe in fact, Joseph's dreams were actually a communication from God. But in contrast to Yitzchak, Joseph's path, his rise, is not linear. But Joseph has ups and downs. And just when it seems that he is become so successful in Potiphar's house, his tremendous success becomes the basis for his downfall. Mrs. Potiphar is enraptured by Yosef. She does everything to seduce him, to sleep with her. And interestingly enough, in the incident which is described in the continuation of chapter 39, this is the first time that we have Joseph mentioning the name of God. In his moment of truth, Joseph says to Mrs. Potiphar, "I cannot be with you, for that would be a betrayal against her husband, his master." And not only that, but in verse 9 he says, "And I will have sinned to God." Which means that on the one hand, here is God who has been with Joseph. And by the way, I want to note, it's the four-letter name of God, the tetragrammaton, Hashem, who has been with Joseph. Extraordinary success. But Joseph says, "So how could I possibly now betray my God?" And speaks of the God Elohim that would be familiar to a pagan consciousness. And as a result of this incident, Joseph is thrown into jail. Being thrown into jail echoes how Joseph had been thrown into a pit in last week's parsha by his brothers. And not only are they similar, but on a conceptual level, in both stories, it seems as if Joseph's life has completely bottomed out. And yet, in the same way that Joseph has this unbelievable change of fortune when he's in the house of Potiphar, the same happens when he's in jail. And in fact, the same language is used when Joseph is in jail. This is chapter 39, verse 21. "And Hashem was with Joseph," the same way it said earlier that Hashem was with him in the house of Potiphar. "And Hashem places his favor in the eyes of the warden of the jail." And then the response of the warden is to make Joseph in charge of all the prisoners. And once again it says at the very end of chapter 39 that the warden sees how God is with him, and that everything which he does, God brings to fruition, to success. So once again, Joseph goes from what we might call rags or misfortune to success. God is with him. God is putting him on a path, a destiny. Little by little, he is learning what it means to be a leader. And then all of a sudden, when he's in jail, the baker and the butler have dreams. And they're very much disturbed by the fact that they feel these dreams are extremely important, but they don't have an idea, a clue, as to what they mean. And Joseph turns to them, and when they explain to him their dilemma, Joseph says, and this is chapter 40, verse 8, "Are not solutions to God? Tell me your dreams." And this becomes a very important development. Once again, we have Joseph, who is speaking about God, but this time Joseph is connecting God with dreams, saying God can help people have an insight into dreams, which also may intimate that maybe God has also given Joseph insight into his own dreams. And as we know, Joseph goes on to solve, to explain the dreams of the butler and the baker. And Joseph actually pleads with the butler to put in a good word with Pharaoh when the butler will be reinstated into his position. Yet once again, Joseph has a setback. The butler forgets Joseph. And this brings us to our parsha, to other dreams, the dreams of Pharaoh. And all of a sudden, when Pharaoh has dreams, the butler remembers Joseph and brings Joseph to Pharaoh to solve his dreams. I want to look at two statements which Joseph makes with respect to Pharaoh's dreams when he's giving him the solution. We all know that Joseph says to Pharaoh, "Your two dreams are really one dream. And in effect, what you're dreaming about are 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine, which will overtake those 7 years of plenty." The verse which interests me is chapter 41, verse 28. Joseph says to Pharaoh, "What I have told you right now is in effect what God is showing Pharaoh through the dreams." And then Joseph says, a few sentences later, 32, "Why were your dreams repeated? Because the matter is..." Now, the word in Hebrew is nachon, which could mean something which is firmly established, something firmly established from God, and also something which is imminent, which God will bring very, very soon. Now, this is the last of a series of dreams which impact on the life of Joseph. And it's this last series which in the end put in perspective the role of God in Joseph's life, which is very much connected with Joseph's dreams. Joseph articulates explicitly, not only can God help people solve dreams, but God is the source of dreams. Dreams are a form of prophecy. In the same way God is bringing a message to Pharaoh, God also brought a message to Joseph 13 years earlier when he had his dreams. And I will now add something else. When Joseph then says, "And now let me make a suggestion," that may also be extremely important. Because Joseph then tells Pharaoh, it will be very important to have somebody who will be appointed, who will gather all the food during the years of plenty in order to provide food for the years of famine. Why is Joseph offering Pharaoh this, what we could call unsolicited advice? So I would like to suggest that Joseph sees this being an integral part of the dream, which means that in fact, if God is now showing people what will happen, it's clear that the reason for doing that is so that people can now act upon those dreams. In the case of Pharaoh, that means knowing what's going to happen, you can now make provisions in advance, which will help you survive the famine. But if I then plug it back to Joseph, it means that if Joseph believes that his dreams were actually from God, and that God isn't showing Joseph his destiny, then Joseph may also believe that he has to be proactive in achieving that destiny. And in fact, I would even go so far as to say that it may be that at this point in time, Joseph can now look back and see a straight line, where we would say connect the dots, which goes from his dreams, which then led to his being thrown into a pit, which then led to his being sold into slavery, which then led to his success, which he also saw as being the hand of God, which then led to a further fall by being put into prison. But that fall, and even his original being dumped in the pit, ultimately were part of a whole process which would eventually enable him to take on leadership roles. And in fact, he can see that at each stage, how he took on different leadership roles. Initially in Potiphar's house, subsequently in the jail, and all of those were stepping stones to eventually bring him to Pharaoh, to eventually solve his dream, but as a result of that, be put in that position of leadership to carry out the instructions that were, in a certain sense, the natural byproduct of the dreams. So that, in fact, when we put all of those dots together, Joseph can now look back and see how God has been involved in his life and at each stage directing him, moving him along, bringing him up and up the ladder to where he can eventually actualize his destiny. And then if we take that one step further, the next step is when, as a result of the famine, as a result of the fact that Joseph is now in charge of everything which is going on in supervising the distribution of food, that Joseph will begin the process of reuniting with his brothers. And ironically, the first step is when the brothers come and bow down to him, not realizing that this is their brother, but seeing him as an Egyptian lord. And that process will go through a number of different stages. And eventually, it will culminate in next week's parsha, when Joseph, in the aftermath of a very eloquent speech which Yehuda makes, pleading on behalf of Binyamin, where Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, and where Joseph tries to comfort his brothers by saying to them, this is chapter 45, verses 5, 6, and 7, where Joseph says, "Don't be sad, don't be angry for the fact that you sold me, because it was for the purpose of sustaining you that God sent me before you." And he says it a second time, "God has sent me before you in order to enable, in order to give you a, provide for you in the land, to give you life, to save you." So that if I would conclude what I would like to say about Joseph, dreams play the central role in Joseph's life and the hand of God in Joseph's life. And Joseph sees how from his initial dream, God has given him a destiny, and how at each step, God has been with him, directing him, so that ultimately he would take on a position of leadership, but that his position of leadership was so that he could now save his family and give them life in the midst of famine. And what initially looked like Joseph taking a position of leadership, I would even say arrogating a position of leadership in the family that potentially could destroy the family, ironically, is transformed into Joseph actually saving the family, both in terms of bringing about a reconciliation and physically enabling them to live. I would like to now, for a few moments, examine the role of God in terms of, from the perspective of the brothers. As we know in last week's parsha, when Joseph has his dreams, when the brother hear his dreams, The brothers are incensed. The brothers hate him. They're jealous. And this state of tension, hostility, reaches its climax when Joseph is sent on a mission by his father to seek out his brothers in the area of Shechem. And when the brothers see Joseph coming, this is in chapter 37, so the initial reaction which the brothers have is that they say, "Behold, the dreamer is coming." In fact, they use the language Bala Chalamot. This is chapter 37, verse 19. The master of the dreams is coming. Let us kill him. Let us throw him into the pit. Let us say a wild beast has eaten him up. In no way do the brothers see Joseph's dreams as being an expression of his destiny from God. The brothers see Joseph's dreams as his aspirations, delusions of grandeur. The brothers see Joseph's dreams as something which can tear apart the family. And in fact, when we see the reaction of the brothers, it immediately echoes the story of Yaakov and Esav, with the brothers now playing the role of Esav, about to kill Joseph because of their jealousy, because of their hatred, because of their tremendous sense of betrayal, perhaps, of hurt. In the end, it doesn't happen. And I won't go into that whole story. But I would like to now fast forward into our parsha. When the brothers come to Egypt in search of food, and when they encounter Joseph and don't recognize him, and then Joseph accuses them of being spies, and Joseph then says to them, "I will not let you come back for food unless you bring your younger brother with you." And he takes Shimon, puts him in jail. What is the reaction of the brothers? This is chapter 42, verse 21. The brothers say, and the language is Ish el Achiv. And it's important to note that same expression, Ish el Achiv, was used when Joseph came in last week's parsha and was almost killed, was thrown into the pit. The same brothers who as Ish el Achiv referred to Joseph as being the dreamer now say, Aval Hashemim Anachnu, but we are guilty regarding our brother. We saw his tremendous angst. He pleaded with us. We didn't hear him. And now this calamity is coming upon us. The brothers, in fact, see what's happening to them now as a form of karma, as a punishment for what they did. That feeling of angst, that feeling which Joseph had earlier, that feeling of powerlessness, and how he was being now at the mercy of his brothers. The brothers now feel, when they're at the mercy of the one who they think is an Egyptian lord. Interestingly, the brothers do not mention God in this verse, but it's very clear that by saying we are guilty and by using the language that, and that's why this is happening to us, the implication is we are now being punished, presumably by God. But if that is not clear enough, it's actually explicitly articulated at the end of the parsha. At the end of the parsha, when Joseph plants his cup in Benjamin's sack and has his servant chase after the brothers and then accuses them of having stolen his cup, what's the response of the brothers? And this is articulated by Yehuda. This is chapter 44, verse 16. Yehuda says, "What can we say to our master? How can we justify ourselves?" And then he says, "Ha Elohim, God, matza et avon avadecha. He has found the sin of your servants." And then Judah says, "Behold, we will be servants to our master, both us and the one in whose sack you found the cup, namely Benjamin." Here the brothers are explicitly saying, God is punishing us. God is punishing us for the sins of what we did to our brother. Measure for measure, we sold our brother as a slave, and now we need to become slaves, to pay, so to speak, for what we did. Joseph sees God in dreams which lay out his destiny. Joseph can see, in retrospect, how all the steps in his life were ultimately pointing him to that destiny. And even when it seemed as if his life was bottoming out, even when it seemed as if things were going in the opposite course, in fact, they always came back so that ultimately he achieved his destiny. The brothers do not have dreams. The brothers experience God in the tragic moments of their reality. And for them, the experience of God is a response to this tragic sin which they had done, to sell their brother into slavery. I would say that this is also perhaps the first time when not only is someone acknowledging that they have sinned, but where they're ready to pay the price for that, where they actually see that God is in fact perhaps demanding that price from them. And that's the meaning behind the events that they are experiencing. So I think these become two very, very interesting models of how one experiences God in a reality where there is no direct communication. And I would end by saying the story of Joseph and his brothers become very, very important in showing that even when God is not directly communicating with us, there may be communication in the events of our lives. And then perhaps it is left to each individual, as Joseph said, to perhaps give the solution for themselves. What is God trying to tell me? What is God? Where is God directing me? And I would end by saying that it was the awareness of God in both of their lives, both in Joseph's life and in the brother's life, that ultimately enabled them to come to a reconciliation, ultimately enabled them to go on together to actualize the collective destiny of the Jewish people. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwager. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.